Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from back in Maryland, Pastor David Whitney, who's with the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking about what separates America from all other nations in the world, and that is our founding documents. Our Declaration of Independence, which states that our freedoms come from our Creator, from God. Our Constitution, which limits the power of the central authority of government. Our Bill of Rights, which limits strictly what the federal government can do and what even our local governments can do as far as our individual freedom. And lastly, of course, the Federalist Papers, which describe in great detail what the true meaning, what the original intent of the founding fathers of America was when they established this unique nation, which for so many years was the envy of the entire world. David Whitney, thank you so much for being with us.
Good evening, Dr. Stanner. Good afternoon. It's great to be with you. It's a pleasure to be able to speak to your fine listening audience. I know that they care about their country and the issues that we discuss here. And we've been in a number of months now discussing the Constitution. And this evening, we're going to look at the Bill of Rights, an overview of the Bill of Rights, but mostly focusing on the first of those Bill of Rights. And often it's called the First Amendment. But in a technical sense, it's not exactly correct to say the First Amendment, but because the entire 10 articles of the Bill of Rights really were incorporated as one amendment. So oftentimes, the proper way to acknowledge it is that Article 1 deals with religious freedom, and Article 2 with the right to keep and bear arms and so on. But commonly, it's called the First Amendment. You know, the rights that they were speaking of, it was not a new idea at all. Historically, Englishmen throughout the ages had thought it necessary at times to reassert their rights. For instance, we know in the Magna Carta in 1215 A.D., the knights surrounded King John, and they forced him at point of sword to sign the Magna Carta, which reestablished the rights that they knew they had, but the king was ignoring and violating. And then a couple of centuries later, to the Englishmen, which was drawn up in 1689, and they actually stated in the Englishmen's Bill of Rights that they were simply reasserting the true, ancient, indubitable rights and liberties of the people. So our founding fathers were not creating something out of whole cloth themselves or something brand new in establishing a Bill of Rights. They were harking back to a tradition that had gone back almost a millennia among Englishmen, to acknowledge that they had rights, as the Declaration clearly states, rights that were given not by government, but given by God, and that government was instituted to secure those rights. Therefore, when government did not secure those rights, the people needed to rise up and reassert that those rights were given to them by God and could not be taken by government.
And that is, of course, why in schools today they will not allow even the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence to be used. And we can't talk about God at all. Why? Because the wicked people who want to destroy this country realize that if you can destroy the belief in God, you can take God out of Christmas or Christ out of Christmas, you can take Christ out of Easter, you can take Christ out of our schools and the Declaration of Independence out of our schools and God and prayer and the Ten Commandments, you can destroy this nation. Because if you destroy the foundation of a nation which is built upon God, then of course that nation will crumble. We'll be right back here in just a moment with David Whitney, bringing you, of course, the message of the Institute of the Constitution. Well, this is Dr. Stan, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney, who, of course, works with the Institute of the Constitution and helping to teach people and raise them an awareness of the history of America and support the fact that America was established as a unique nation because we attributed to God our freedom. And in the Declaration of Independence, the statement is made that the freedoms come from God. And of course, when when the governments are instituted among men to secure those rights, those God-given rights, and this is what America was all about, different than any other nation, where the ruling authorities bequeath certain rights to the people. Our rights came from God. You see, that's why there is such an effort today to take the Christ out of Christmas, to take the Christ out of Easter, to take mention of God out of our schools and out of our courts, and us, because they realize what the average Christian doesn't realize, and that is that this was at one time a Christian nation, and that the Supreme Court on four separate occasions decreed this was a Christian nation, and the state Supreme Courts decreed that as well, and everybody in this country knew we were a Christian nation till about 50 years ago when they infiltrated the seminaries and the wicked people began teaching our ministers a different message, and they infiltrated our universities. They knew exactly what they were doing. They just could not allow the American people to know, and little bit by little bit, we have lost the uniqueness that made us once the envy of the whole world. So you pick up the story there, David.
Yes, it's very interesting, the background of the Bill of Rights, because when the Constitution was created, there were seven articles, and there was no Bill of Rights. James Madison, usually known as the father of our Constitution, said that a Bill of Rights was not necessary, since the government, the federal government that is, had only limited delegated powers. Only what was stated in those seven articles could the federal government do. Therefore, Madison said there's no need to prohibit the federal government from doing what the government has no authority to do anyway. So he said it's unnecessary because only what's written in those seven articles is the government, federal government permitted to do. But we know that the those who opposed that view were wise, because they understood that those in power will often seek to expand and grasp powers that are not granted to them unless there's, as Thomas Jefferson said, the chains of the Constitution bind them from doing so. And so it was with wisdom that a Bill of Rights was created, even though Alexander Hamilton said he viewed a Bill of Rights as dangerous because it could not possibly list all the rights, and therefore a future government might...
Hold that thought for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stanback here, and our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney, and we're talking about the Bill of Rights. And David was saying that, of course, James Madison didn't want a Bill of Rights because he said it was his contention that the powers of the federal government were limited and defined by the Constitution, and there was no need to say what it couldn't do because, of course, there were only specific things that it could do. And then, of course, Alexander Hamilton, who really believed in a monarchy, who had very close ties to the financial rulers of Europe and really wanted, in effect, a monarchy here, wanted to elect a president who would serve almost literally for life. He was furious when we wouldn't go along with these concepts of his. He was one of those aristocrats and leaders, but he didn't want a Bill of Rights either, did he, Alexander Hamilton?
No, he said that you couldn't possibly list all the rights, and so a future government might conclude that rights not listed on the Bill of Rights were therefore forfeited to the government, and that rights would better be protected by relying upon established English and American common law. But actually, his objection was answered in the Ninth Amendment, and we won't actually get there this afternoon, but when we do look at that in the future, we'll see how the Ninth Amendment answered that objection, saying that basically only the things listed here in the Constitution are permissible for the government to do. All other rights are reserved either to the individuals, which is the Ninth Amendment, or the states, which is basically what the Tenth Amendment asserts. But many, in spite of Madison and Alexander Hamilton, wanted a Bill of Rights because the Anti-Federalists, those who actually opposed the ratification of the Constitution, had a number of objections, and there were some good objections in what they had to say. For example, they said that the lack of the Bill of Rights was dangerous because, again, we haven't chained down the federal government sufficiently enough, and this Bill of Rights will further chain down the federal government beyond what just the seven articles of the Constitution established. Patrick Henry was one of these, and George Mason, another great patriot. Thomas Jefferson, interestingly enough, even though he was not in the United States at the time, he was ambassador to France. He said that he generally liked the Constitution as it, he had read, but he regretted that there was a lack of a Bill of Rights. And so during the ratification debates in each state, as each state was considering ratifying the Constitution, one of the most strong objections to ratifying the Constitution was a lack of a Bill of Rights. And so there was an agreement struck that said there will be a Bill of Rights, and therefore many of the states who did ratify it ratified it upon the promise that a Bill of Rights would be quickly following their ratification of the Constitution, which of course there was.
And I think that the one thing we'd like to leave with our listeners is the realization that the Founding Fathers did not trust men. They really felt that they were evil, they would misuse power, and they were looking towards future generations, not necessarily themselves, although I think they realized that they too were sinners, saved by the grace of God, and so they wanted to limit the power of government, realizing that only by limiting the power of the federal authority could there be individual freedom within the states. And of course the power of the central government, according to the federal 45th of the Federalist Papers, were to be strictly limited and defined. The powers of the state governments were unlimited and ill-defined, and those would deal with life, liberty, and property. And how far we've gotten away from that today, when the federal government interferes with everything, and they know that they're violating the Constitution. But you see, they have a different agenda, and they're hoping that you out here won't realize that some of the greatest lawbreakers in America are working within the Senate and the Congress of the United States. So pick that story up there.
That's right. Well, interesting, the Bill of Rights came out about in the opposite way that the Constitution did. The Constitution was delegates sent from each state to the convention. They met and they debated and they hammered things out together as a convention. Well, the Bill of Rights, actually, as each state ratified the Constitution, in those ratifying conventions, the states proposed about 350 amendments to the Constitution, which would compose a Bill of Rights. Now, many of these amendments duplicated each other, and so James Madison worked these 350 amendments into 12 amendments, and he introduced them to Congress in 1789. And the Congressional Committee then reworked those amendments and passed, actually, only the first 10 of those 12 received the three-quarter votes of the states to actually ratify them to become part of our Constitution in 1791, known as the Bill of Rights. Interestingly enough, the 11th Amendment, Madison's 11th Amendment, dealt with the issue of congressional reapportionment and was never ratified in the entire history of our nation. The 12th Amendment, however, dealt with congressional pay raises. And initially, it didn't receive any strong support, but in recent years, this amendment has been revived, actually, and it was finally ratified by three-quarters of the states in 1993. And today, it's known as the 27th Amendment. So a little interesting trivia about the development of the Bill of Rights. Well, each of these, first of these 10 amendments, when we look at them, we'll see that they limit federal power. They add chains to what the federal government can do, or you could see it this way, Dr. Stan. They erect a wall, a high and intended to be an impregnable wall around what the federal government could do inside the four walls of the Bill of Rights. But in terms of state governments, the Bill of Rights was never intended to apply to the states. Now, the states, many of them, I know here in the state of Maryland, we have a Bill of Rights, so each state would draw up its own Bill of Rights, most of them echoing and adding to the Bill of Rights of the federal government, but it was never intended for restrictions on the state government, only restrictions on the federal government. And as we study these amendments beyond the Bill of Rights, beyond the first 10, we'll discover most of the remaining amendments, not all, but almost all with one or two exceptions, actually expand federal power. And we'll see when we come to the 14th Amendment and the 13th, 14th, 15th, oh, we could talk about the 16th, and we've talked about the 17th before. All of them actually were breaking down the walls that the framers had designed to restrict the federal government. So now that, as you just described after the break, the federal government has far more power than it was ever intended by our framers.
And I really think every person out there should remember what Thomas Jefferson said, and David referred to that before. Thomas Jefferson said, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but rather bind them down by the chains of the Constitution. In other words, chain the politicians. Don't allow them to expand their power. Well, of course, what they've done is take the chains off the politicians, and they're molding them for the citizenry across America today. In the name of fighting terrorism, why, we've got to have Neighborhood Watch. We've got to have Americans reporting on Americans. We've got to have everybody has to have a national ID card with biometrics in that. We've got to monitor your medical records, so we'll have that information. We've got to have the government be able to look at your income tax forms. We have to know all about your financial transactions. We have to know where you are. And so every cell phone has a special monitor in it, so the government can track you even if it's turned off. They're building that into all of the cars. Everything is to be regulated and controlled. They know exactly what they're doing. And if they were really concerned about fighting terrorism, they'd close our borders down. They have no intention of doing that. In fact, they're doing everything they can to keep police from arresting illegal aliens in this country. What's happening, you have to understand, is we're not involved in a war on terrorism. We're involved in a war on the American people and on their freedom. And the American people go blithely along saying, that couldn't happen here. Why, after all, this is America, and I would like to suggest this was America. And America was free as long as the people understood our laws. They really don't understand the Constitution, do they, David?
No, they don't, and that's exactly why we at Institute on the Constitution are diligently seeking to teach millions of Americans these truths that we're sharing here on radio, because if millions of Americans would wake up and recognize what you've just described has taken place, that we could throw out the politicians who will not abide by their oath of office to defend and protect and uphold the Constitution, and we could put people into power who would follow the original intent of the Constitution as designed by our founding fathers. We were talking just briefly about how the Bill of Rights is to limit the federal government and not state governments and not local governments, and that has been turned on its head basically by a misinterpretation of the 14th Amendment, and when we get to the 14th, we'll talk about that. Incorporation doctrine that has shoved the Bill of Rights down upon the heads of the state and local governments, which it was never intended to do.
But I think people have to understand that the First Amendment, which has said that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, was written at a time when most of our states had a state religion. Each state was allowed to have its own religion. Religion was a matter having to do with the states. And it was only by truly diabolical approach to this, violating every rule of jurisprudence, that they've been able to twist things around, because evil people know how to twist words. But they never could have gotten away with it without the organized help, of course, of the members of the legal profession and the members of the Fourth Estate. The reporters, of course, who very quietly kept quiet and, of course, have failed to challenge the wicked people who are moving us from freedom towards fascism. So pick up the story there, David.
Well, we come to the First Amendment, and it's not first just for any trivial reason. It's first because it is the most important of all the amendments. Let me just give you a little background by, for example, one of our great founding fathers, Patrick Henry. As a young attorney, he rode into, I believe it was Culpeper, Virginia, if I remember the details correctly, one day, and he saw a man being whipped, and severely whipped, so severely whipped that he could actually see the bones of this man on his back, his rib cage actually exposed by the lashes he was receiving. And the man was so severely whipped that 3 days later he died in prison. And he got to asking people in the town, why is that man, what evil, what terrible thing has that man done that he's been whipped so severely that he's actually been whipped to death? The answer was, he is preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ without having received a license from the state of Virginia.
Well, of course, it's not that bad here yet, but of course now, of course, they're bringing the churches under the control with this faith-based initiative. Oh, we want to help. We just want to give you people in the churches money. But it's because we love Christianity so much, and of course, the churches become dependent upon government, why, of course, they lose their independence, just like they have in communist China, where they have the three-self church, the government church, that preaches the government gospel. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. except genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America: the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well tie up cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinix is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney. We're talking about the First Amendment to the Constitution, which is pivotal to understanding what's going on today. And it's amazing how you can confuse people with words. I'll never forget there's a scam that they use on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. And you're walking down the street and some fella comes up and says, I do shoe shines. I bet I can tell you where you got those shoes that you got on your feet right now. And if I can't, I'll give you a free shoe shine. If I can, you got to give me $5. So, a lot of people fall for that. And so you say, well, now, how can you know where I got the shoes that are on my feet? Oh, I know where you got those shoes on your feet. And of course, eventually, you start getting your shoes shined. And then he says, well, now I'll tell you, you got those shoes on your feet, and you're in New Orleans. So you got those shoes in New Orleans. Well, of course, it's totally misconstruing the use of the phrase. But you see, that's what they've done with the Constitution, because they had another agenda. And these are truly wicked people, aren't they, David?
They are. And their agenda is the destruction of Christianity, actually. That's why the First Amendment was clearly stated. They understood that the battle is a spiritual one, and if our nation did not have the spiritual protection of religious freedom, none of the other freedoms would actually matter at all. Patrick Henry, the story I told you about, his experience of seeing a man whipped to death, moved him so powerfully that he spent years, along with a number of other young attorneys, riding around Virginia for free, defending Baptist, particularly Baptist preachers, because they were the nonconformists in Virginia that would not take a state license to preach. For example, in 1768, he rode for miles on horseback to a trial in Spotsylvania County, and he entered the rear of the courtroom where three Baptist ministers were being tried for having preached without the sanction of the Episcopalian Church, the established church in Virginia. In the midst of the proceedings, he interrupted, "May it please your lordship, what did I hear? Did I hear an expression that these men, whom your worships are about to try for a misdemeanor, are charged with preaching the gospel of the Son of God?" And he did this all over the state because he knew that if there is no religious freedom, none of the other freedoms matter at all. And so the First Amendment is actually all about religious freedom. People, again, have misconstrued it, saying that, well, yeah, the first phrase is about no establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, and that's all it's about religion. The rest of it's about or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. All of those things are religious activities, and as a matter of fact, in their day, most of the things published were religious pamphlets, religious booklets, religious books, and actually newspapers all carried sermons. Every newspaper carried sermons. That was one of the most well-read portion of the newspapers of those days. So the freedom of speech, of the press, to assemble, to petition government, were all things that were being done by Christians as an expression, as an exercise of their freedom of religion. And it was all about the freedom of religion from a centralized federal government having power over the churches in the states. Now, as we mentioned, most of the states already had established religion, so we need to understand that this was a restriction only on the federal government, not on the state governments. The states could have an established religion, as most of them did. And the colonial charters had made it very clear before that the only source of governmental authority is God himself. New England colonies, the southern colonies, and middle colonies, often of these spoke of the religious freedom for which they were established, even if they had established churches. Well, the preparation for our war for independence actually was the tremendous revival that swept through America, the Great Awakening, and that established a breakdown of the old structure that said, if you live in the state of Virginia, you had better be an Episcopalian, and if you live, you know, that kind of heavy-handedness was being broken down as people were discovering the Bible for themselves and discovering that much of what government control over religion was actually negative and destructive to what was taking place spiritually. And we know that one of the motivating factors, perhaps one of the greatest motivating factors for the war for independence, was that King George and Parliament had both talked about establishing a bishop over all 13 colonies. And they knew what that meant. Bishops were only hired because they were experts at torture. They knew how to afflict and beat down and persecute those who were nonconformists. That's the kind of people that were hired for that job. And it's exactly what they knew was coming their way. If King George and Parliament had their way, their religious freedom would be gone. And many of them said, no, we will not do that. We will rise up and we will resist. And ultimately it led to our war for independence. And so religious freedom was at the heart of what America was founded upon as a constitutional republic.
And then, of course, as our boys went overseas to fight in Vietnam, why the Supreme Court took God and prayer and out of our schools, progressively, of course, increasing government power over our lives as they went overseas to fight for freedom and lost it at home.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And David, would you tell our listeners what the Institute of the Constitution is about and how they can get in touch with this and set up their own training program in their community, which is foundational if we're ever going to begin to take America back?
That's right, Dr. Stan. We put together a 12-week course that gives a working knowledge of the Constitution, starting with the historical background and foundation, the religious underpinnings, showing that our founding fathers were establishing a Christian nation, not some secular, atheistic, humanistic nation or deistic nation, a Christian nation founded upon the laws of God written in His Word and written on human conscience. And these 12-week course, anyone can actually conduct the course. We put it together kind of as a turnkey method that the video lectures, half-hour lecture by Dr. John Eismo, constitutional law professor, does all the instruction for you, and we put together a student notebook that is a detailed outline of each of those lectures so the student can follow along making their own notes. And then for the host, that is the person leading the class, we have a set of review questions to help the students reiterate in their minds exactly what that lecture contained, and we've given them the answers, the host the answer to all the fill-in-the-blanks there, and some discussion questions that can further aid his class in wrestling with the issues and looking at examples of how these are being violated today and misapplied today. And then a test for each of those 12 lectures so that the student during the week following can check their progress to see how they're doing in terms of understanding these principles. Along with those 12 lectures, we packaged the historian David Barton's two lectures, one dispelling the myth of the wall of separation between church and state, and the other explaining that our founding fathers said the only way to preserve this constitutional republic was for people to elect Christians to office who would uphold the original intent of the Constitution. And he shows that in a very powerful way from the quotes of our founding fathers, quotes that have long been forgotten, and we have long abandoned that. Well, people can purchase this host kit online at our website, iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. Or they can call us a toll-free number, 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. We encourage people to do this in their churches, gather a group of people together in a community center or public library or even in your own living room, to teach these principles to a widespread number of Americans, so as you said, we can take our nation back from those who have robbed us of our constitutional republic.
Amen to that. Well, I think it's so vitally important. Well, we were talking about, of course, the First Amendment to the Constitution and its true meaning, which was to limit the power of the federal government, but not the matter of the state government.
Right.
And those wicked people who've been appointed to the Supreme Court, and of course between 1941 and 1971, where the Masons control the Supreme Court of the United States in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1, and why won't any of our religious leaders tell us that? Why won't any of the conservative leaders tell us that? And, of course, the most carefully kept secret in America is the pagan or neo-pagan influence working at the highest echelons of the media and even within the church today. And there are others who know, and they're just afraid to say anything. Well, we passed the point where you can afford to be afraid,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to speak out for righteousness, and you've got to proclaim the truth now, or we will certainly lose what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. So pick up the story from there, David.
Well, the most important phrase that people believe is in the First Amendment is not there at all. The wall of separation between church and state occurs, that phrase and those words occur nowhere in the First Amendment, actually nowhere in the entire Constitution. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Now, just taking that first phrase, which is usually the most twisted and misunderstood, at least in the last 50 years, if you go back to understand what it meant to those who drafted it and to those who ratified it, those who debated it, we can read what they said. For example, on the floor of Congress, Floyd Summery, Madison said this on the floor of Congress. He apprehended the meaning of the words to be that Congress should not establish a religion and enforce the legal observation of it by law, nor compel men to worship God in any manner contrary to their conscience. That's Congress, is not to do that. Chief Justice Joseph Story, in his commentaries on the Constitution, 1833, one of the earliest Supreme Court members and Chief Justice, he said, quote, probably at the time of the adoption of the Constitution and of the amendment to it now under consideration, that's the First Amendment, the general, if not the universal sentiment was that Christianity ought to receive encouragement from the state so far as was not incompatible with the private right of conscience and the freedom of religious worship. An attempt to level all religions and to make it a matter of state policy to hold it all in utter indifference would have created a universal disapprobation, if not universal indignation. The real object of the First Amendment was not to countenance, much less to advance, Mohammedism, by which he meant Islam, or Judaism, or infidelity, by which he meant atheism. He's not to countenance or advance Mohammedism, Judaism, or infidelity by prostrating Christianity, but to exclude all rivalry among Christian sects and to prevent any national ecclesiastical establishment which would give to a hierarchy the exclusive patronage of the national government. There, our founding fathers expressed very clearly what the First Amendment meant. Its intention was to restrict the federal government. It was not to rid the public square of all religious influence, nor to make Christianity equal to all the other religions, as our current president seems so fond in talking about the God of Islam as the same as the God of the Bible or the God of Christians, which is completely a lie and so on. But we know what the Founding Fathers believed and what they wrote in the First Amendment. The only question is, are we going to follow what the First Amendment meant in its original intent, Or are we going to listen to the lies and distortions that have come in the last 50 years?
And, of course, you know, it's so fascinating today as we approach Christmas and we see any mention of Christmas being taken out. Even many of our stores, Macy's store, for instance, will not allow any reference to Christmas in the store. Oh, they'll sell all sorts of goods, but they will not allow any reference to Christmas because it has to do with Christ. And there is a boycott going on. We'll be talking more about that against some of our major stores, which are anti-Christian. And you understand they're anti-Christian. It all makes sense. If you understand that the Supreme Court justices who did what they did are anti-Christian, that our school textbooks are anti-Christian, the original, the educational establishment is anti-Christian, they know that if they can destroy Christianity, they can destroy this nation, and that's what it's all about. And when you understand that, it all makes sense. Otherwise, you sort of shrug and say, well, I don't understand why these things are happening. They know exactly what they're doing. Hollywood, the people who run Hollywood, hate Christianity. And we even have a wonderful interview. It's in called The Gods of Entertainment by Carol Matriciana, where she interviews this man who's been in Hollywood for 20 years. And he says the purpose of Hollywood is not to make money. It's to destroy Christianity. And where is the outrage from the church? Oh, we don't want to say anything that might offend anybody. Well, I think it's time for outrage. Go ahead, there, David.
Amen. Well, the next phrase is equally important. Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That is, prohibiting the free exercise not of Mohammedanism, not of Judaism, not of Shintoism or witchcraft. No, not prohibiting the free exercise of Christianity. In other words, children going to school and praying at their lunch today are being told that they're violating the First Amendment and they have to be arrested. I have students in my church who tell me that they have been told in no uncertain terms that they cannot even carry a Bible into a public school. They'll be taken and given detention. The Bible will be taken away from them. These kind of things are exactly the opposite of what this means. You are not to prohibit the free exercise of Christianity.
Yeah,
therefore,
about
praying
the
and reading the Bible and preaching and sharing the gospel are all legal.
And, of course, there was a teacher recently who was chastised attacked by the principal of the school because he passed out a copy of the Declaration of Independence, and it mentions God in it. And we can't have that passed out in schools. Well, where does this come from? Well, that principle is anti-Christian. That's what it's all about. And until we understand that and until we get these people out of our schools, and, of course, really the best solution is get our children out of the government schools and rear them in the way that God would have us. And I think every parent that has their government in government schools, their children in government schools, will one day have to stand before a God and explain why they cared so little about their children that they would turn them over to an atheistic system intent upon destroying their religious faith.
And that's one of the things we find very encouraging. Many homeschoolers are using Institute on the Constitution's host kit to instruct their high school students in a basic civics course, a basic understanding of our Christian history and the foundations of our Constitution and our form of government. Well, then the next phrase, after not prohibiting the free exercise thereof, is, or abridging the freedom of speech. And again, the speech they had in mind is the proclamation of Christian truth, just as Patrick Henry saw a man whipped to death for proclaiming the truth of Christianity. They said, no, the government cannot do that. The premise here is that truth is best determined by letting an airing and discussing of ideas rather than a bureaucrat establishing what is truth. The general principle is that speech is protected, but many states also recognize that this does not protect every form of speech. It does not, for example, protect blasphemy, nor does it protect obscenity, and all the states had laws at that time clearly saying that it's a violation of the freedom of speech to blaspheme the name of God or to present obscene literature, and therefore all this misinterpretation of the First Amendment that would protect pornography on the internet and crazy judges that at one time said that nude dancing was an act of freedom of speech and therefore the government could not restrict. It's just the insane misinterpretation of this phrase has been seen in our day in the last 50 years. Certainly, there are certain forms of expression that are outside the protection of this phrase. Speech that presents clear danger to national security or public safety, such as crying fire in a crowded theater, that kind of thing. You cannot do that. Speech that solicits crime or violence, obscenity, and pornography and defamation, all those things are not protected by this phrase, freedom of speech. Or freedom, the next phrase is, or freedom of the press. And this phrase, in a sense, again, was interpreted by our founding fathers in the religious sense, that they wanted the freedom of the proclamation of the gospel to be written and printed. And they knew that they had great opposition in the prior to the war war with England, because in that war of independence, part of the reason that the King of England was fighting against the American colonies is the pastors of America had printed their sermons that were extremely critical of the King of England, basically calling him to repent on a number of issues. And they would print these sermons, distribute them throughout the colonies, and they would always mail a copy of that sermon to King George III so that he could read their criticisms with his own eyes. And it infuriated him. And that's the sort of thing that they were intending with the freedom of the press. And this would also protect us against undue governmental control over private expression. That a person, if they want to publish a magazine or a newsletter, or for instance, they have a view that they want to be put forward, the government should not have an ability, unless it's under the restricted forms of speech, to restrict them. And then the final clause of the First Amendment, or the freedom, the Congress does not have the right to restrict the right of the people to peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And this is exactly what the colonists had done repeatedly. And finally they came to the Declaration of Independence, which lists 28 of those grievances that they had repeatedly communicated with the King of England on, and repeatedly they had been rebuffed, ignored, and actually the King's insensitivity to the colonists' grievances was one of the factors that led to the Declaration of Independence. So the public presentation of grievances can and should be a safety valve, and we see, as you know, this being turned off increasingly in our, I guess you would say, surveillance society, that they're trying to shut down the opposition. There was a time when they were trying to shut down the talk radio programs like yours and prevent people from expressing those ideas freely, and shut down the possibility that we can go to our government and say, look, this is what the Constitution says. You have violated the Constitution in this clause and this clause and this clause, and we demand a redress of grievances. You change your ways or we will replace you in office. And that, again, is the path back. But it first takes people understanding the Constitution so they know how to hold their elected officials accountable to the law of the land.
Well, I think that it's so vitally important that people understand that Christianity is under attack, the Constitution is under attack. There are people who really want a fascist society. In the United States, they work together in organizations, and one of the leading organizations is the Council on Foreign Relations, and of course, every Secretary of State, going back to 1953, has come from that organization. Do you really think that happened simply by accident? And we find the chairman of the Federal Reserve System has, since 1953, every one of them comes from that same little group. Doesn't matter whether the Democrats or Republicans are in power. And we have to get back to an understanding that the rights of the individual are being progressively limited. But, of course, the First Amendment, taking God out of our schools, taking God out of public places, taking the Ten Commandments out of public places is part and parcel of that whole situation. And isn't it amazing that the current Christian administration would reward the man who destroyed the career of Judge Roy Moore, and that was the Attorney General of Alabama, William Pryor, who destroyed Roy Moore, and he was rewarded for that. By, of course, being given an interim appointment to a federal bench. Why would a Christian administration reward the man who destroyed the career of one of the few judges who was willing to stand up and publicly display the Ten Commandments of God? Nobody wants to ask that question. In fact, most Christians don't even know that happened.
Yes, and that's the indication of the anti-Christian thrust of not only the current administration, but you can look to the previous administration, and on it goes back in time. They are seeking to destroy Christianity. And Dr. Stan, if Christians don't wake up to this reality, that our religious freedoms are being stripped away day by day, I believe there in California, Governor Schwarzenegger signed the bill that makes it a hate crime to say anything critical of homosexuals. I'll be interested to see what happens when the first test case comes, when a pastor preaches out of Romans 1 or Leviticus 18 and says clearly what the Bible states of homosexuality. Is he going to go to prison in California because he is proclaiming the truth? Is there no First Amendment left in a state like California?
Well, let's get your telephone number off once again there, David, so people will know how to get in touch with you.
Our number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796.
And let me suggest that you, people out there in the listening audience, get involved, get the information, begin to teach it to others. Because if you don't know the foundations of our freedom, how are you going to preserve them? If you don't know where we came from, how do you know where we're going? God bless you. Thanks so very much for being with us. Bye-bye.
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we really want to tell you about some of the items we have that will help you understand the Christian history of our country. We carry Tim LaHaye's book, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers. We carry William Federer's wonderful book, America's God and Country, and it's over 850 pages of the quotations of our founding fathers professing their belief in Christianity and the fact that America was a Christian nation. We carry Abandonment Theology. We carry David Barton's Original Intent, going into the fact that the First Amendment, when it was written, was never to restrict what was happening in the States. And everybody knew at that time that America was a Christian nation. Then why do we know it today? Why? Because of the control over the media. So let me suggest those books again, The Original Intent by David Barton, America's God and Country, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers, and certainly Abandonment Theology. We have a four-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom. It's four-hour interviews with Dr. Herson, and really it's an excellent overview of the Declaration of Independence and certainly of the Constitution of the United States, the sort of information you need to know so you can discuss this intelligently with others. Because if you don't understand the foundations of our freedom, how are we going to possibly maintain it? So all of these are available by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we believe, of course, that before you can begin to oppose the enemy, you have to understand what we are for, why America is unique and different. And believe me, America is a unique and different nation. At one time, we were the envy of the entire world, and the ministers were willing to speak out on issues. They had not yet been indoctrinated with the devil's message. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking about the fact that many of our ministers have actually accepted the devil's message. They honestly believe that they're not taught to do anything but preach the gospel, but never to talk about the issues that face us. And they're preaching something called Romans 13. And we have a wonderful book. It's written by Erwin Lutzer, one of the great ministers of our time. He is the senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church. And, of course, he talks about what happened in Hitler's Germany. The book is called Hitler's Cross, Hitler's cross. We carry it because Erwin Lutzer talks about how they used Romans 13 in Hitler's Germany to neutralize the message of the ministers. Everybody is to be subservient to the government. Well, the leaders of government were supposed to be subservient to God. That's what it says in Romans 13, but they never talk about that. They never talk about the fact that God has given us a unique and novel nation unlike any other in all recorded history. It had given us a constitutional republic, and we got it because the ministers had the courage back at the time of the Revolutionary War to be the leaders, and we maintained our freedom through the years because the ministers were, of course, the leaders of our society. And then about 50 years ago, the wicked people infiltrated the seminaries, and of course they taught ministers, you should never speak about anything having to do with government, why you'd antagonize some people, and you have only one function. And that, of course, is to preach the gospel and bring people to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And I believe that is the major function of the minister. But I also believe he is to be the leader in the community and to give wise counsel to the people. And not, as we've seen recently, so many of the ministers just saying, you've got to back the party that claims that they're pro-life. Really look at the record of the recent Republican Party. It is not pro-life. In fact, in many ways, it is even worse in Bill Clinton's administration, but nobody ever tells the people that, and that is because our ministers really don't have the information, and they set out all of these so-called Christian voter guides, and of course they don't even mention the third-party candidates where people really are pro-life and would take a stand and oppose the war and oppose ever bigger government. And they give the Christians, do you vote for Socialist Party A that wants the war or Socialist Party B that wants the war? And which candidate you want to vote for? Well, I think it's about time the Christians took the time to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. And that's why I suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We'll be glad to send you a free catalog where we have all sorts that will help you better to understand what's going on today. That's The Brotherhood of Darkness, and then the other books I've mentioned earlier, all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-7. We do carry the Cloud 9, Cloud 10 productions. It's Christmas is coming, and these are great videos. The Left Behind series, the 1 and 2, but we have a excellent video that they made. It's on both DVD and video. It's called Deceived. It stars Lou Gossett Jr., and it tells about what happens when high government officials contact the occult. Really, if you like an exciting adventure story, the video is called Deceived, with Lou Gossett Jr. and a cast of great authors, but a wonderful Christian message. We recommend both the video and the DVD to you. It's called Deceived. It would be a great Christmas present and something that the whole family would enjoy. And then, of course, we have the Left Behind 1, Left Behind 2. We have, of course, a whole flock of their videos that we recommend. They're wonderful entertainment, and, of course, they all on the divinity of Jesus Christ. So if you'd like to get a free copy of our catalog, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, just request the October newsletter. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival for our leader, because we're told to, but please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.